Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community.
Welcome to our show. My name is Deborah Rose, and I'm your host on Circle Talk. Circle Talk is now one of the shows featured on Circle Sanctuary Network Podcast, or CSNP. The Circle Sanctuary Network podcast team have put together a lineup of rotating shows throughout the month. Mondays feature Lunatic Mondays with host Laura Gonzalez, alternating in weeks in English and Spanish. It can't be Tuesday without Circle Talk, and I'll continue to be the host for this fun show on the first and third Tuesdays of each month. Wednesday features Nature Spirituality with Selena Fox. Are you in the mood for some magic? Then you'll want to tune in on Thursday for Moon Magic with David and Jeanette Ewing. It's such a fun and informative lineup of shows, and I hope you try them all. Tonight, we're going to be meeting Deborah Blake. Deborah Blake is the award-winning author of Baba Yaga and Broken Rider Paranormal Romance Series and the Veiled Magic Urban Mysteries from Berkeley. She has also written A Year and a Day of Everyday Witchcraft, The Goddess is in the Details, Everyday Witchcraft, and numerous other books from Llewellyn, along with a popular tarot deck. She has published articles in Llewellyn Annuals, and her ongoing column, Everyday Witchcraft, is featured in Witches and Pagans magazine. She also has a new book coming out that we'll be talking about tonight, Modern Witchcraft, which is a guidebook to witchcraft as a female empowering religion, including detailed instruction on how to practice self-care in today's society through goddess worship and magic. Deborah can be found online at Facebook, Twitter, her popular blog, Writing the Witchy Way, and at her website at www.deborahblakeauthor.com, which is DeborahBlakeAuthor.com. When not writing, Deborah runs the Artisans Guild, a cooperative shop she founded with a friend in 1999. She also works as a jewelry maker, tarot reader, and energy healer. She lives in a 130-year-old farmhouse in rural upstate New York with four cats who supervise all her activities, both magical and mundane. Welcome, Deborah.
Unmute.
How are you
Welcome
doing?
To Circle Talk, Deborah.
Circle Talk, Deborah.
Thank you so much.
Well, I am
well,
a huge
I'm
fan
a huge
of
fan
your book,
of
and
your
so
book,
I have quite
so
a few.
I have quite a few.
I love you already.
Come on.
I'm really excited.
How did you, have you always been a writer? Tell me how that process started.
Well, I actually have.
Thank you, everyone. We had a little technical difficulty. I think we've got a storm coming up, but we're back right now. So Deborah is going to tell us about how she started writing.
That's right. Sorry, apparently the witches broke the magical technological things again. It happens. So I actually have been sort of writing a bit on and off for my whole life. And then back in, I think it was 2005, which was a year after I had started leading my own group, I got this sort of idea for a book, which was, the book that I had wanted to find and read when I started my own group and I couldn't find it.
Mm-hmm.
So I basically got the universal kick in the butt that said, yeah, write it yourself. And I wrote the first five chapters, submitted it to Llewellyn along with all of the stuff they wanted. And 2 weeks later, got an email back from the woman who's been my editor there ever since, Alicia Gallo, who said, I really love this. Can I read the rest of the book? Only there was no rest of the book yet because normally it took them 6 months to read anything. And she had
right.
just started there as an editor and had what she likes to refer to now as an eerily empty desk, which has never reoccurred, I might add. And so I wrote that rest of the first book, sent it off to her, and we have been working together ever since. And I have 11 books with Llewellyn. Modern Witchcraft is my first mainstream witchcraft book with St. Martin's Press. They've also been lovely to work with. With Llewellyn, I also have a tarot deck and an oracle deck. The Everyday Witch Tarot, the Everyday Witch Oracle. Mm-hmm. But the Modern Witchcraft book is sort of a slightly different approach for me. It's basically aimed at women and those who identify as female, which is, you know, not necessarily the same thing. And it's all about goddess empowerment and about, you know, being sort of your best self, which, you know, for me is part of being a witch, is it's all about, you know, following that path so that you can become your most empowered self, your most self-actualized self, your best witch, your best person, your best woman, man, whatever. You know, that to me, that's sort of the point of spirituality in general, and certainly witchcraft in particular. And I hope that my writing, all of it, helps people to follow their path, whatever their path is. So that's a really long-winded answer to a pretty short question.
No, that's really fun. So tell me, give me an example. You talked about it, talks about doing self-care through goddess worship. Give me an example of a type of self-care that you talk about in your book.
I don't remember. I wrote it 2 years ago. I'm sorry. This pandemic has broken my brain. I will be completely honest and say that I am not as focused as I would normally be. But like this chapter 6 is all about surviving and thriving in the midst of challenging times, and goodness knows they don't get any more challenging than this. And, you know, I talk about women who are inspirational, not necessarily just witchy women, but, like, you know, various women. But, you know, I also talk about listening to goddess, you know, and sometimes that means you have to be quiet. If you aren't quiet, you can't always hear the messages that, you know, the goddess of the universe is trying to send you. And we, for better or for worse, have a perfect opportunity right now to be quiet. You know, turn off the TV, turn off the internet, turn off the phone, and listen to see if there's a message for you. Use that message, if possible, to create positive change in your own life. I'll give you a personal example. I have a day job. I run an artist cooperative shop with 50 artists, which can be a little crazy, but I love it. Mm-hmm. I've been doing it for 20 years. And of course I write and I make jewelry that I sell at the shop, you know, plus I'm involved in all sorts of things. And, you know, the pandemic came and I thought, well, this is great. I get to sit in my house. I'll get all this writing done. I'll, you know, do these, you know, other things. I'll catch up on my exercise. Please insert laughing here. And somehow, you know, between being caught up in checking the news and the internet, and, you know, I live in upstate New York, so I listen to Governor Cuomo's daily, you know, thing. And I realized a couple of weeks ago that I was really stressed, which is, I think, not unusual for anybody right now, but that I also was not getting things done at all. And I had this bizarre realization, which was I was not living my best pandemic, if that makes any sense. here I was given this opportunity I've been saying for years, if only I had a month to stay in my house and catch up on, you know, fill in the blank here, organizing my upstairs, you know, weeding through my books, getting cleaning done, doing all these things. And I wasn't doing it because I was allowing myself to be distracted by the stress and by the uncertainty and all the rest of the things that they're very real, but nonetheless, I couldn't fix them. I couldn't change them, and yet they were overwhelming my life. And so I chose to back off a little bit on the news, and I chose to try and reach out to, you know, family and friends a little bit more, spend more time snuggling with my cats, try and get my focus back enough to write. And so, yes, now I'm, for lack of a better term, trying to live my best pandemic. If this is where I'm stuck, I am trying to make the most out of it, whatever that means.
So how did you grow up, Pagan? How did you?
Oh, heck no. No, I grew up with a Jewish background. Everybody in my family is Jewish. As far as I can tell, there are no witches in my family ever. And there are, ironically, no goddesses in the Jewish religion. If you look way back, there is, you know, some people think there's a goddess in there somewhere that got sort of trampled on and shut in a closet. But I basically sort of came to it through my own journey, as many people do. Judaism is a wonderful heritage, and I love the history, and I'm very proud of, you know, that part of who I am. But as a religion, it didn't do it for me. And, you know, I tried Unitarians for a while. They're great. It wasn't a good fit. Still a little too on the Christian edge. Studied Buddhism and pagan Buddhism and Taoism for a while, and it was close, but not quite there. And then I had a friend who'd been trying to get me to come over to her house for ritual, and I kept saying, "But I don't like people." One Samhain, one Halloween, she said, "Oh, hardly anybody's coming. You know, you should come to this. You'll like it." And her idea of hardly anyone was like 30 to 40 people in a fairly small apartment, and everybody was hugging me and saying weird things like "blessed be." And I went, "What the heck have I gotten myself into?" And we had a feast, and then we went to the park next to her house, and I took part in my first ritual. And when I was in that circle, something happened. Something that to this day gives me goosebumps to think about it. It was magic. I reached out as I had been reaching out for years, but this time something reached back. You know, the god and goddess were there, and I never looked back. That was the beginning, and God, that was 25, 30 years ago, a while. But yeah, that night in the park, you know, I found what I'd been looking for all that time.
Isn't that fun?
Oh, it was amazing. I kid you not, it brings me to tears to this day, because there was something that I was looking for that I wasn't even really sure was out there. If you'd asked me, I probably would have said I was an agnostic, that I thought there was the potential for a something, but I'd been looking for a long time and I'd never found it, and I didn't really think it was there. And then I went into this circle, and God and Goddess went, "Well, it's about time. There you are. Here we are." And it was just like, oh, look, I was just looking in the wrong places.
And we're better for it. Like I said, I have quite a few of your books. I love your books. In fact, I have your little book of cat magic. I wanted to talk about that. And
oh,
I know that you are
one of my favorites.
A big cat person. Tell us about that, how that came about.
Well, actually, there's a funny story. I mentioned my editor, Alicia Gallo, from Llewellyn. And a few years ago, she said, I'm going to send you something for your birthday. You're either going to love it or you're going to hate it. And I went, what? Okay. And a month after my birthday, which is the end of April, I just turned 60 last month, if you can believe it. But I got this package from her, and I'm walking up from my mailbox. I live in the country, so I have a, sort of a long walk down the driveway. Mm-hmm. And I opened it up, and there was this little book of dog magic. And I went, why is she sending me a dog magic book? I don't have dogs. I mean, I like dogs. I love dogs, but I have, a zillion cats. And there was a note from her that said, here's your birthday gift. How would you like to write the little book of cat magic to go with this series? You know, I know you said you weren't going to do any more of these kind of books, but, you know, because at that point I was trying to focus on the fiction. She said, but I can't imagine anybody else writing the little book of cat magic. At that point, I still had my own cat, whose name was Magic, who co-wrote many of the Llewellyn books with me and was my familiar and was sort of well-known to my fans. If you've read a bunch of my books, you know all about Magic. And, and you know, I went and called her and said, I called my agent first because we had talked about me just doing the fiction books. And I said, well, you know, Llewellyn wants me to do the little book of cat magic. And she said, well, of course you have to do it. Who else is going to write this book? So, it was just meant to be. And it, as it turned out, it was my cat Magic's last book that she contributed to. She died after the book was finished, but before it came out to the public. So for me, it's a even more special book than it would have been otherwise, because it's kind of like her last gift to me and her last gift to my readers who loved her almost as much as I did.
Absolutely. So did you set out, did you research, or a lot of these things did you already have kind of in your book of saddles, you knew?
I actually did a lot of research, and I am not, most of my books are not research heavy. They're mostly sort of me just spilling my guts onto the page in what is hopefully a helpful way and saying, this is how I do things and here's my best suggestion for this. But the little book of cat magic has things like cats through history, and so I had to look Egypt and India and Persia and Japan, and you know, and I actually found some really cool things while I was researching the book. And then there was, you know, mythology and folklore and tales, and there were some things that I knew already, but there were also things I didn't know. Plus, I decided to put poetry in here and went looking for, you know, cat poems, you know, some of which were my old favorites, like, you know, The Owl and the Pussycat. I love that poem. Mm-hmm. I grew up with that as a kid. And then there were things that I'd never seen before. So, you know, that kind of stuff I did research. All the spells, of course, you know, are things that I wrote and came up with.
Right.
But, yeah, there was actually a fair amount of research, and it was it was fun. It was, you know, I mean, bummer having to read about cats. Oh, so sad. Very bad.
Oh, yeah. No, it is obviously a book of love. And so, and you, I know that Magic passed the veil, but you have cats now, right?
Oh, I have five I lost Magic and her brother within 8 days of each other, which was horrible.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, her brother made it to a day past 16. She was, a week short of 16. And they had very good lives. And I had lost their mom the year before. And I literally got down to just one cat, Angus. And I said, oh, my goodness, they're going to kick me out of the crazy cat lady union if I don't get more cats. So I thought, okay, I'll just go get two more cats. I'll have three. Three is a nice number. And, you know, the first cat, I believe Magic sent me to him. He's a black cat. That's Harry Dresden. And I went through one of the shelters in my local town, and there was a cat who was being fostered at somebody's house, and he was, I think he was like 4 months old when I met him. And I went to this woman's house, and I went to her basement where she had a bunch of kittens, and I sat on the floor and I played with him, and he was very adorable. And I said, you know, I explained to
aww.
Her I had two cats that were literally in the process of dying, and that I couldn't bring anybody into the house until they were gone, but that I also knew that I was going to be absolutely crushed when I lost them, which I was. And wow. I know, you know, some people have to wait a period of time until they're ready, which I absolutely respect. For me, I knew that if I didn't have somebody furry to cuddle, I was going to lose my mind. And so there I am in this basement, and Harry's, like, playing under my coat, and he's sitting on my lap. And I said to this woman who was down in the basement with her kids, and I said to her, you know, well, you know, I can't be sure if he's the one. And we both looked down, and he was asleep in my lap. And I looked at her, and she looked at me, and I could see her trying not to laugh. And he went,
yeah, he's
all
one.
Right, he's fine. Just hold him for me, and I'll be back for him, you know, whenever things are ready. And then a friend of mine found another cat for me, and when I went to go visit the cat that turned out to be Ember, she had a brother. There were, you know, again, four kittens, but, you know, these two were siblings. They were clearly bonded. Each of them came up and greeted me and, you know, separately, and then they walked around the room together, you know, like in a circle together.
That's cool.
And I said, well, all right, I guess I am going to take both of them. So that was four, and, you know, the one I had already, and those three, who were all about the same age. They were, you know, 4 or 5 months old. So I had a year and a half of insanity until they hit about 2 years old, and I thought, okay, this is good. I'm done at four, and then the local shelter that I had adopted Harry from said, okay, we have this mama cat who is a stray who literally gave birth yesterday, and we're full up. All of our regular fosters are full up. We desperately need somebody to take this cat. And I thought, I'm completely safe. I have an older cat. I have three cats that just hit 2 years old, and I don't have any desire for kittens. I can do this. And that's how I got Diana. So apparently there is no such thing as completely safe, and I don't get to foster any more kittens. So Diana's 9.5 months old now. She's completely insane. Diana, named both after the goddess and after Diana, the Amazon princess from Wonder Woman.
Oh, how fun.
Well, she was extremely sick when she was a baby, which is how I ended up keeping her. She almost died, and she fought and fought and fought. And I said, you know, here's this kitten that just looks like your average, you know, plain secretary. And it turns out she is a warrior princess. And here she is being warrior princessing all over my house. So, yes, now I have five, and I'm done. Thank you very much.
Do they all get along?
They do, actually. I'm very fortunate. Angus, who is the elder cat, is the sweetest boy. You know, he grew up in a shelter, and I got him when he was 7 months old. And he's always been, you know, sort of buddies with everybody. Mystic, Magic's brother, who died, was his pal. And when I got Harry, who was the first one in the house, he took to him right away, and it was about 3 weeks before I took in the other two. The only one he had a momentary pause was Diana, because she's such an energetic nutball. And they curl up together. Occasionally he looks at her like, what were you thinking? Why? Why did you bring this crazy? Like, literally right now, she just ran through three rooms, bounced off a wall, and is, I think, either chasing a bug or something invisible. I don't know. But, yeah, they all get along great. I'm very, very fortunate. No fusses or arguments. They're just a little bit of a handful. Nobody's magic. My cat magic was the first familiar I ever had, and I was hoping that one of the ones that I brought in would be a familiar, and at least as of yet, nobody has shown any indication whatsoever of being interested in the magical things. But, not all cats are familiars. That's one of the things that I talk about in the little book of cat magic. You get a cat because you want the cat. If you're really lucky, they end up being a familiar. She was always sort of special. But, these guys are wonderful and, crazy, but not familiars. And that's okay. I don't love them any less because they're not interested in magic.
Absolutely. And that's funny because I've had several cats, but I had one cat specifically that was very drawn to magic. I literally couldn't do a circle without him being, literally right there always. And so, it is. You can tell there is a big difference.
We had this sort of joke, my own personal circle, Blue Moon Circle. My very small coven. We would, if we were not outside, in the outside circle, because my cats don't go outside. But if we were inside in the living room, I have this round table that I use, and we would all sit on the floor around it. And we could tell it was time to start the ritual because Magic would walk in the room. She would literally walk around the circle, greet everyone, and then either sit under the table or on the couch sort of supervising. She was very big on supervising. And then we'd know we were done because she would jump down off the couch or, walk out from the table and walk out of the room. And it was like, okay, that's it. Magic's done now. But the interesting thing to me, which we all loved, when she walked around the circle, she always walked DSL. Always walked.
Isn't that fun?
In the correct direction. And, you would think a cat would walk, any which way. Nope.
Right.
Not this one.
Yeah.
No, she was a truly special cat. I was very blessed, very, very blessed to have her.
That is so fun. Well, you've mentioned several times that, I'm a fan, but I have most of your nonfiction books. I had no idea you even wrote fiction. So I'm very excited.
Well, surprise!
About that, because I'm going to go to the library or get on Amazon and get something. So tell us how you made that jump from nonfiction to thinking about fiction.
Well, the funny thing is I'd never intended to write nonfiction. I always intended to be a fiction writer. And with my witchcraft practice, the nonfiction, basically the gods kicked my ass. I think they decided that what I had to say was important. Bless them. I hope they're right. And so I started off with that, but I always meant to write fiction. And a couple of years after the first nonfiction book came out, I finally got an agent, and then a couple of years after that, and 4 books later, I think, we sold a novel and then a series of novels. And actually, the first bunch of books all had witches in them. Go figure. There's a theme here. So, there's the Wickedly Dangerous books, which are actually based on the Baba Yaga legend from Russia, which was, of course,
mm-hmm.
about witches, except, you know, I modernized it and made them a couple of witches who were sort of fun and kick-ass, and, you know, they're what they call paranormal romances.
Right.
And so each of the three books in that series has a different Baba Yaga, but yes, they're all this traditional fairy tale witch brought into the modern world, and the original Baba Yaga, you know, flew through the forests in a mortar steered by a pestle, and she lived in a wooden hut on chicken legs that would move through the forest. So mm-hmm. in my first novel, the Baba Yaga in that book lived in an Airstream trailer, you know, that would move Ooh. Around and rode on a classic BMW motorcycle, but they were both magic. You know, the Airstream trailer had a door that only let people in if it wanted to, and so people would go to knock on the door, and then the door would suddenly be on the other side of the trailer. And in the Baba Yaga legends, there was a dragon called Chudo Yudo, and I love dragons. That's after cats, dragons are my favorite animal. And so each of these Baba Yagas had their Chudo Yudo. The first one was disguised as a gigantic white pit bull. The second one had a gigantic black Newfoundland dog because she was a water witch. And the third one had a gigantic Norwegian forest cat. But they were all really dragons. So they're a little fun. I mean, I like, you know, a little romance, a little humor, a little adventure. And then I had a series of what they call urban fantasy, which is not necessarily set in our world. And those also had witches in them. Those are the Veiled Magic books. And I have a couple of sort of contemporary romances that don't have witches. But, yeah, they're, witches tend to show up in my writing a lot.
And
I have 12. The Modern Witchcraft book will be my 12th nonfiction book, and I have 12 fiction books plus some novellas. So, yeah, I'm sort of even, you know, I love writing both. They tap into different things, and they appeal. A lot of my readers, bless them, read both. You know, they found me through one and then liked the other. You know, certainly a lot of my nonfiction readers then found the fiction books and went, oh, cool. But, you know, there are even, you know, some of my fiction readers who are not even necessarily witches, but sort of enjoy, you know, the philosophical and spiritual aspects of what I talk about in my witchcraft books. So, yeah, hopefully there's a little something for everybody.
So what was harder for you to write, fiction or nonfiction, and which takes most work? I mean, do you have to do research? Tell us about that.
Well, I would say the fiction is harder in a lot of ways because there's, well, for one thing, you're making stuff up. I mean, in the nonfiction, you know, it's not easy. Don't get me wrong. And some books are easier than others. But, you know, essentially for the nonfiction, I just talk about what I'm going to talk about. And sometimes I have to do more research, like with the Little Book of Cat Magic. The Modern Witchcraft book was more me just, you know, trying to help. I mean, I actually did do a lot of research on the goddesses for this. I mean, not that I don't know the goddesses, but, you know, I had to try and figure out what was the best way to present them. Luckily, I own, I don't know, like 20 other books on goddesses. I have a pretty extensive nonfiction library by people other than me. But, yeah, the fiction is tougher because you have to come up with, you know, a plot and characters. And there's a lot more revising that goes on with the nonfiction. The revising is mostly your editor saying, well, you sort of left something out here. Could you fill this in or polish this bit? With the fiction, it's more like, well, this bit doesn't make any sense at all. Could you rewrite that.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, they're different kinds of work, I guess. But yeah, I would definitely say that the fiction is considerably harder to write, but no less rewarding. It's a different, you know, one of the things that I like to do is give everybody a happy ending. All of my books, no matter whether they're paranormal romance or urban fantasy or contemporary romance, or even the ones I'm working on now, which are cozy mysteries, that there's a happy, you know, because real life sadly does not guarantee us a happily ever after. And I don't want to read any books that don't give me a happy at the end. And I don't want to write any books that don't give me a happy at the end.
Tell us, because I think I'm a big cozy mystery reader. Tell us, our listeners, what the mysteries are, and tell us about yours.
Well, okay. First of all, there are no witches in these mysteries. I apologize in advance. I know. Well, the thing about publishing is there are things that are in and things that are not in, and you can't sell the things that are not in. That's just the way it works. And there was for a long time – give me that back. Sorry. The kitten just stole my sock. She has a sock fetish. It's not a good thing, which, you know, I wouldn't mind her carrying them around, but she chews holes in them. So I had taken my socks off because it was warm, and then she stole one. Yeah, didn't mean to interrupt it. Sorry. It's a lot about kitten herding around here. So the paranormal cozies are not in at the moment. And I had this idea when my agent, bless her heart, Elaine, said, you know, I think your writing style would be great for cozy mysteries. And I said, really? Are you sure? Because I don't write mysteries. I write romances. Mm-hmm. And she said, no, really, you should think about it. And I realized that this local rescue that I'd gotten both, you know, Princess Diana and Harry from, which is sort of this shoestring operation run by a woman who's highly overwhelmed. I mean, she's fabulous, but she sort of, you know, took on what looked like a good idea, and then it was just, it's been insane. And I've been, you know, I help out, I donate money, I, you know, volunteer a little bit. You know, periodically they put up a post on Facebook and say we're running low on cat litter, and I go to the local, you know, big box store and I just fill the back of my car with cat litter and bring it over and drop it off, wearing a mask at this point. But I thought, I could write a cozy mystery about a woman who strikes it lucky on a lottery ticket, doesn't know what to do with herself, finds this little black kitten that, you know, is astray, goes to take it into the local shelter, and the local shelter says, oh, we can't take this kitten, we're full up, which is pretty much true all the time around here. You know, and it's really too bad that rundown shelter down the road is folding, because that, you know, they would have taken it. So she buys this rundown shelter, and then, that's of course, fun. You know, mystery ensues. And so the little black kitten, who, yes, of course, is based on My Cat Magic, because why not? You know, is sort of a part of the story, and the shelter is part of the story. And her cool friend, who's a dog groomer, my best friend's a dog groomer, I might add, although she is not 6 feet tall with lavender hair, as the best friend in the story is. My best friend is my secret weapon, because she knows all about, you know, the dog grooming things and all of that kind of stuff. So I was doing research all along when I was adopting these cats and didn't realize it.
That's really fun. Yes, I will definitely be looking. And everything's going to be real.
So the first one is going to be called Forbidden Fatality, F-U-R. The cozy mysteries, they have to have that silly pun things. And here's the really cool thing. I'm going to take a percentage of all the money that I make on these books and donate it to the shelter.
Oh, that's really fun. Oh, I'm glad you noticed that. That's really
Well, you know, it was a huge inspiration to me, and they need it, you know, and it's, you know, I truly believe that by giving back, you get something back.
Right.
So, yeah, so that's the newest part of the saga is, you know, that I'm going to have Cozy Mysteries out, but also that, you know, I've got a new book coming from a completely different publisher. You know, I've done, you know, 11 of my books were with Llewellyn, and book number 13 actually will be back with Llewellyn. That's going to be a Book of Shadows, which was a lot of fun to work on. That's the one I'm working on right now. The book is finished, as much as any book is ever finished. You know, we're all have some revisions to do, but it's going to be illustrated, which will be a lot of fun. I think they're going to actually try and do full color illustrations to make it sort of look like it was a Book of Shadows that somebody did, you know, sketches in and things. So that was a lot of fun to work on, too.
So do you also do a blog?
I have a blog. You know, I haven't been doing as much on it just because things are so crazy and because I started a Patreon page and I have to post to that, too. And, of course, you know, I have a Facebook page. Well, two Facebook pages, my regular one and then an author one, and Twitter. And my agent made me go on Instagram, which is pretty much just pictures of my cats.
Oh, that's fun. Tell us about the Patreon.
So the Patreon is a thing. I actually started it when my cat Mystic was very sick because he was on – he had cancer and it was awful. And he was on narcotic painkillers that cost $10 a day.
Oh, wow.
Which was insane.
Wow.
Yeah, and
right.
But and it's the kind of thing that they normally give cats for 3 days, and then they say, well, you know, this is too dangerous. We can't keep them on it. But he
right.
was dying,
right.
And they said, well, whatever. And it bought him 5 months. But for 5 months, I had him on painkillers that cost $10 a day. And a friend of mine said,
wow.
You should start a Patreon, which basically is a way for people to support the creators that they like, whether it's
right.
An
right.
author or a musician or like the illustrator for my tarot and my Oracle cards is on there. I follow her on Patreon to support her because she's fabulous. That's Elizabeth Alba. And I do have a bunch of authors that I follow and support, but it gives you a way to sort of, you know, contribute to the creative process. And so I started it when I needed money to pay for the cat's meds, and I've kept doing it because it's an interesting thing in that you get this much more personal interaction with people than you get on a blog. You know, like I post spells, like a spell a month for a certain level, and I had, you know, a book that I was putting up as a serialized thing for people. I was actually doing live witchcraft classes once a month for the higher levels. You know, at this point, I'm sort of veering away from that. But, yeah, it's – and, you know, for the people who are at the $1 level, they still get cute pictures of my cats. And you know, pictures of whatever it is I'm reading. You know, I post pictures of like this is what I'm reading right now myself.
Right.
Pictures of the garden and the fish and whatever. So I've sort of put a little bit more energy towards that. And the blog is mostly at this point used to do like giveaways. For instance, I do have advanced reader copies of the Modern Witchcraft book. And since it's coming out July 7th, which is like a month and a half from now, I'll probably do you know, a couple of giveaways on my blog and probably a giveaway on Facebook, you know, just to sort of spread the word and, you know, remind people that it's out there, that kind of thing. And sometimes I just do it for fun, you know, like I did a few at the beginning of the pandemic because we were all so depressed, and I thought, well, this is a way I can cheer people up.
Absolutely. And I really, again, Patreon is a way for people to support people they follow. And like you said, for example, when I first heard about it, I thought, oh, you know, I can't afford $10 a month. I didn't realize it can be a very nominal amount, but it means something to the artist because, or the author, because, you know, you get several of those and it adds up.
Oh, yeah. Well, and, you know, like my particular Patreon starts at $1. Then there's $3,
right.
$4 is like I do like a couple of times a month I do a tarot or an oracle poll and just say, well, this is the message for, you know, everybody this month.
Right.
You know, there's a $5 level, a $10 level. And, you know, I have a couple of people who, you know, do like 25, I have a couple of people who do 50, bless them, because, you know, my work is important to them and they want to support it. And,
right.
You know, I'm so appreciative of that because it is a difficult time for, you know, creative folks,
absolutely.
You know, for artists, you know, you can't, there are no book signings. You know, I had two conferences scheduled where I would have gone and sold books and done things. They got canceled. So, yeah, and it's also a way, one of the things that I like about Patreon, I was really hesitant when my friend suggested it, but she said, no, this is a way that you're not just asking for money. It's not a GoFundMe. You're
right.
offering to give something back to people, you know, and they get to choose what level they want, which reward they want, or whether they don't care. And I'll confess, the people that I follow, the people that I support, half the time
mm-hmm.
I even forget to check on my reward stuff. You know, their videos that they post or the you know, their chatty stuff. I just support
right.
them because I
right.
think they're fabulous, and I want to be part of the creative energy that goes
yeah.
out into the world from these people. So, yeah, I think it's a great invention. I mean, it's just, it is so cool. You know, I have a couple of artists I follow. I have a couple of, you know, authors. And it does, you know, it helps them be able to continue to create instead of having to, you know, maybe work two day jobs, you know, which,
mm-hmm.
you know, I work a day job, but it's part-time so that I can do my writing. And if I didn't have all of this other stuff, yeah, I might have to get a real job. My God, that would be awful.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And like I said, it's something I haven't heard all. I've heard a lot about it lately, but I didn't know very much about it. And I have a friend, and they just decided that they were going to spend, you know, $30 a month, and they divvy it out to people that they follow, and that's just an expense for them, like electricity or rent, and it's something
yep.
they budget for, but again, it allows them to be part of the process.
And, you know, I think it's a great thing. I mean, the name of it, Patreon, back in the days with, like, the Romans and the Greeks, you know, the Italians, the artists had patrons. They had people who paid their living expenses so that they were free to create. And we don't have that now in our society, for the most part, unless you're very, very famous, in which case you probably
right.
don't need it. The people who need it are people like my brother-in-law, who is a caricature artist who makes his living going to fairs and events and, you know, doing things in person, and he can't do that now. And yet his work
right.
is still amazing.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, he doesn't have a Patreon. I have to kick his butt and make him get one. But, yeah, you know, for folks like that, this is survival. This is groceries
right.
on the table,
right.
and having the groceries on the table means that they get to put this fabulous, fabulous work out into the universe that makes us all better off. I think a society needs creators. It needs those artistic folks. And some people are lucky enough to be able to make enough money doing that that they don't need anything from anybody. Those are not that's not the norm. You know, most
right.
creators are highly underpaid is what I'm going to say.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And like you say, if they have to work a part-time job or a full-time job to support it, it cuts into their creativity time.
Oh, it does. And virtually all the authors I know also have a day job. You know, I know a few who write full-time mostly because they have a significant other who has a day job.
Right. Right.
But, yeah, it is difficult to make a living. You know, people think authors get rich. I can tell you, as an author, there is no rich here. It's not.
Absolutely.
I am,
absolutely.
You know, I'm not eating lobster every night. And, oh, really? Seriously? I heard a noise in the kitchen and I walked in. And the little monkey child, this monster that is my kitten, had taken the little spoon that's on the sugar container, knocked it on the floor. She was playing with it.
Oh.
She's adorable, but, oh, she's part demon. Part demon, I tell ya. Yeah, and I have a lot of spells in my cat magic book. I have nothing that works on this child. She is impervious.
That's so fun. So if someone was interested in supporting you on your Patreon page, tell us where we go.
You go to Patreon and look up Deborah Blake. It might be Deborah Blake author, but either way, you can find me. I don't hide on the internet. It's either Deborah Blake or Deborah Blake author, no matter where you go. I have no imagination. For a very creative person, I basically stick with my own name, and that's Deborah, D-E-B-O-R-A-H. You know, what I like to say is the long biblical way.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I also have links, you know, on my webpage, which is DeborahBlakeAuthor.com. I told you, no imagination. But yeah, if you look up DeborahBlakeAuthor.com, that will get you to my webpage, and it has links to the Patreon. It's got links to, you know, my Facebook, my Twitter, you know, all that, my blog, all that groovy stuff. And it also has descriptions of all the books, so if you're not sure if you are, you know, really that intrigued by, you know, the new one, you can check it out and see.
And I know, you can purchase books on Amazon. Can you purchase your books through your website?
You can purchase, actually, on top of everything else, this is why I'm so tired. I have an Etsy site. which I sell signed books on, because I get requests all the time. People want,
right.
you know, a signed book. And I said, well, you know, you're going to have to pay extra for shipping and stuff, whereas Amazon, if you've got, like, the Prime, you can get it for free shipping. And they say, we don't care. We want it signed. And I say, okay.
Right.
And I throw in some bookmarks and some fun stuff just because I can. And I have some magical kits there and some jewelry because I also make jewelry. So if you look up, you know, Deborah Blake on Etsy, you can find books there. But, yeah, my books are available pretty much everywhere you find books. They're available on Amazon. You can get them direct from the publisher, so Llewellyn, or with the fiction mm-hmm. books, Penguin. The new book is St. Martin's Press. You can also get them from Barnes & Noble. If you have an independent bookstore in your town, please support your independent bookstore. They can order pretty much any of my books, as far as I know, including the tarot deck and the oracle deck. You just go and say, oh, I want Deborah Blake's Modern Witchcraft book. They can put in an order for it, and then you're supporting your local independent bookstore, which is a wonderful thing.
Oh, absolutely. And they are fading from our landscape. So, and I worry about
Yeah, we're really lucky. Where I live, we've got a really strong bookstore. They don't have a lot of my stuff because it's more sort of art, like bestsellers and lots of kids books.
Right.
They've got great kids books. But, yeah, if somebody walks in the door and says, you don't have one of hers in stock, can I get it? They will order it for you in a heartbeat. So, yeah, there are a lot of great independent bookstores, and they are very much struggling, especially now. And a lot of them can still do, you know, order it. They'll mail it to you, curbside pickup. Some places they're open again. So by all means, support your local independent bookstore.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much.
And also libraries. If you ask your library, if you don't feel like going out and spending money on a book, well, okay, I can live with that. But libraries will often order a book if somebody asks for it.
Oh, that's a good idea. I will.
I grew up in libraries, so I know these things.
My local library.
Oh yeah, yep. And I actually take whenever I get a book out, I donate one to my local library, so they've got one in their system, and so people can find them there. Not everybody has money to go out and buy a lot of books. I get that, and I still want them to be able to read my books. So by all means, if you don't want to spend the money on a book, if you don't think you're going to treasure it and keep it forever, although you should, ask your library.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I can't believe it's been an hour. You are a delightful guest. We definitely will have you back on when your new book comes out, so we want to hear all about it. And thank you very much, Deborah. You were absolutely delightful.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
And remember, everyone, if you want more information about her book, please go to her website at www.deborahblakeauthor.com. And you can also, as she said, find her on Facebook, Twitter, and even Instagram. I'm going to go to Instagram and look at pictures of your cats. And she has an Etsy store, so hunt her up. I'd like to thank all of you out there, our listeners, for your continued support of all of our shows here on Circle Sanctuary Network Podcast, or CSNP. Our next Circle Talk will be Tuesday, June 2nd, so please come back. We'll now transition our show with a musical selection. Good night, everyone. Be safe and blessed to be.
Your women booze or porn. Something wicked's been stirring in my body. Something wicked's in my blood. Something wicked's been stirring up trouble. Yeah, I've had enough. Something wicked's been brewing in my heart space. Something wicked's in my mind. Good kind. I won't be your bird in the hand. I won't be your bird in the bush. I can't pull your head out of the sand. I can't pull your head out of your tush. Something wicked's been brewing in my body. Something wicked's in my bones.
Sanctuary Network Podcasts, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow the Nature Center paths. Join us here throughout the week for various programming connecting the community around the world. And please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSNpodcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites, such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. And until next time, many blessings.